Welcome back to Expert Instruction, the Teach by Design podcast, where we dive deeper into the research surrounding student behavior by talking with the people implementing these practices, where they work, and with the students they support. I'm Megan Cave.
I'm Danielle Triplett.
It's now September, and school at this point for everyone, even here in Oregon, when we start very, very late compared to the rest of the country, is now in full session.
Our kiddos are back.
They are. Summer is done.
I'm fine with it. My daughter didn't do any summer camps this summer. She's in middle school. It's different, but she's home a lot and I love her to pieces, but I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Back in the routine.
I thrive in a routine.
100%.
Like I am my best when I know exactly when I wake up, what happens next, the time that the kids are in school, when I come to work, when I go pick them up. I live for a routine. So it was time. Summer was good.
Yep, summer was great. But
I'm ready. I'm ready for some, from an established schedule.
Exactly.
Well, today we are continuing our exploration of data as an element of PBIS, and we are we're really talking about the work that goes into using data in a meeting, and how you can infuse it into the decisions that you make and support the decisions that you make. It kind of guides us in that process.
Right. And it's one of those things that we all do, even people that, I mean, whatever field you work in.
Yeah.
There's meetings you go to, you talk, you look at data, you do things, but like, it's not always a great experience.
It's not. It really isn't. Nobody really likes a meeting. And there's that old saying, like, this could have been an email.
Oh, yeah. They have mugs that say that, socks and all of these things.
Uh-huh. The other thing that I'm realizing, Danielle, is that like, this is our second episode and we are covering... So the first one was data, which is as a word, it feels boring. Mm. And then this is meetings.
Right.
Also feels like, what are we doing here, you guys?
I know. Remember last year we had one all about Starbucks and coffee? Like, what's that? When is the fun one?
But I have to tell you, like, the guests that we have coming on to talk about these things that seem mundane are so excited about this work that they're doing that they actually create some excitement in me and some curiosity in me on how I can improve the things that I do here at work and how we can share those practices with you all.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. I mean, I just have so much respect for Erin and hearing her, you know, you'll listen in, folks listening, but like, the work has been going on a long time.
This is really a long-lasting project.
That's just not typical in our field.
It really is. Things come
and go and ebb and flow. And this is something with real staying power.
That's right. Danielle mentioned our guest. Her name is Dr. Erin Chaparro.
Yes.
And she is our colleague here at ECS. She's a research associate professor here at the U of O. She's a principal investigator on a grant. It's called Team Initiated Problem Solving.
And it's TIPS.
It tips. That's what we call it. And it's a process that she's going to tell us all about. She's also a co-author of a book called Assessment in Special and Inclusive Education. Erin has been a person that we've worked with for a really long time, and she took over this project from Dr. Rob Horner and colleagues of ours that she shares everybody's name, gives everybody credit. But Rob was our guest in August, and she has taken over this project. And like Danielle said, it's got legs, this thing. It keeps going. And the thing that she shared with us during our conversation is that TIPS is the only problem-solving process out there that is scientifically based. It's a scientifically based practice.
That's huge.
She said there are others that are a best practice. There are others that are an evidence-based practice, which means that as a scientifically based practice, they know that adults doing this work, the work actually causes the improved outcomes that the teams had set out to achieve.
There's not a lot out there.
There's not a lot out there. I read a lot of journal articles. I go through a lot of really dry stuff. And there's a lot of folks that'll say, like, if you do it, it's likely that you could maybe possibly see this thing, right? The people are, you're hard pressed to find someone that will say, if you do this, then that.
Yep.
And that's what they're saying.
Right.
So TIPS is real, man.
It's great. It's great. Well, one of the things that stood out for me in this episode that I was reminded of and that I've said forever, and I'll say it again, and that PBIS, like the little secret, is that it's not about the kids. It's actually about changing adult behavior because it's changing what we do. That is what impacts the students. And TIPS is such a great model for that. And listening to Erin talk really, she explores that topic and tells us why that is, right? And what are some of those best practices that, mm-hmm. that really affect change?
And they're simple, you guys. These practices, you the things that she's talking about are so simple. You can find all of the resources for it on their blog. We'll put a link in the description. Mm-hmm. You can also find a lot of these resources for free on pbis.org yep. on the Technical Assistance Center's website. And if you stick around to the end of the episode, Erin will share how you too can get involved in this awesome work that they're doing. They're recruiting, you
guys.
They
sure are.
Their project is recruiting, and you can be part of this process and contribute to educational research, which is a huge deal.
Great opportunity to contribute to research, but also do what's best for kids.
Absolutely.
In your own school.
For sure. Yeah. Listen in.
Okay.
Well, hi, Erin. You're back. You're with us again.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Oh my God. And in person. So far, we are 2 for 2 on in-person guests, Danielle.
I know. The 2025-26 school year. I like this.
The big season.
Oh my God.
It feels different.
Oh my God. And the first time that we had Erin on, she was our second guest ever. Can you imagine? I just was looking it up. It said episode 2. We're on 51.
Oh my God.
Just came out.
This is
just came out last.
Congratulations.
Yes. But you were guest number 2, and we were on Zoom, floundering, I'm sure, because Zoom was so new at the time.
Oh my God.
And you were teaching us all about how to have virtual meetings.
Right. How to have positive, effective virtual meetings, right? I have to say, it's what a different world.
Now we're here.
We're here in person again.
I know.
I love it.
I know. Finally. Well, thanks for making the drive up and for joining us.
Yeah, of course.
Here. So we're going to talk to you a little bit. We're talking about a field of PBIS that you seem to know a lot about, mm-hmm. or at least you've studied it for a while.
I've been doing it, studying it, breathing it, nerding out on it. Yeah,
that's good. I'm happy to talk. Decision making. Yeah. And so your grant that you've been working on for some time now is team initiated problem solving. We call it TIPS mm-hmm. around here. So tell everybody a little bit about what TIPS is and how is it that this project in particular has been able to sustain itself for so long?
Yeah, so TIPS was first developed by Dr. Rob Horner, your previous previous podcast guest, along with Ann Todd, Bob, and Kate Algazine from University of North Carolina, other colleagues who really saw the positive things that schools who are implementing PBIS are doing, but then saw that there was a need in the meeting space mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. people were getting together and they had data, but they still felt overwhelmed by data. And so TIPS, team initiated problem solving, is filling a gap mm-hmm. within that data-based decision-making, mostly universal tier 1 leadership team meetings, but also it can be applied in tier 2 and tier 3.
Okay.
So TIPS is just a model basically that helps us. We've got 3 components to it. We've got the meeting foundations, we've got the database decision-making part, and then we have the implementation decisions. Mm-hmm. And so it just offers the structure to make sure that those team meetings feel good, effective, and that they actually have the desired impact on students that we want them
Incredible.
To have.
We love it. We love it. You know, Erin, I want to share because we talked about the longevity of it. Mm-hmm. And I know working with schools, you get in this cycle where you learn, like educators, they're kind of like, oh, here's this new initiative. It's going to come. And then we're just kind of sitting in the back and wait and it's going to go away, right? Yeah. Like that's kind of the trend in education. And TIPS is amazing because it does have such longevity mm-hmm. across years. And I'm thinking back when I was a PBIS coach in Gresham Barlow, I mean, this was probably 2010, 11, and we were part of the study. And I had folks like Ann Todd and come to coach our schools and collect data. And I also noticed that in the schools we worked with that were using TIPS, it did make a difference. Like we had an impact. It was just really cool. So I'm just so proud of this work. And I think it just speaks to what an important project it is, that it has lasted mm-hmm. and it continues to grow and expand. And
and absolutely.
Kudos to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm an expansion of the team that originally started this work. And I think the first grant that got funded for the research and development of this, of TIPS, was back in 2007, 2008. So your school district was on, you know, the vanguard of this work. So that is is really important. And yeah, you should be proud for contributing to those early days of this work, certainly. And then we've had a total of 3 grants. Well, actually, this is the 4th one that we have. Amazing. That just got funded last year. Amazing. And the unique thing about TIPS is, I'll say this, that database decision-making is very common, right? Anyone doing PBIS, MTSS, everyone's trying to do a form of it. And there's different models out there. Like, a lot of people are familiar with PDSA, Plan, Do, Study, Act, mm-hmm. different problem-solving models. But TIPS is the only scientifically based database decision-making model out there for schools in the country today. So,
really?
Yes. So it has the highest level of evidence of any other database decision-making process out there. So
incredible.
There's others out there that have had some evidence. So they might be an evidence-based practice or just a best practice that is kind sure. of the lowest level of evidence. Uh-huh. But TIPS is a scientifically based process in that it's had 2 randomized control trials. The one that I have right now is the 3rd one. And because of that, Rob's study, the last one, actually was able to show that teams who are using TIPS have reduced out-of-school suspensions and reduced mm-hmm. rates of office discipline referrals. So we were able to make that direct scientific connection between the yeah. adult practices in the team meetings, the action plans they're building, the solutions they're building, and then having a direct impact for the positive on students.
I have to say, it's such a rare thing to find. I read mm-hmm. these journal articles mm-hmm. often for my
good
job.
For you. I need to figure it out.
And it's rare to find anyone who's willing to say that the thing that was implemented correlates directly mm-hmm. to the outcome you receive.
And even beyond correlation. Mm-hmm. So this is a causation that
amazing.
We can say because of the wow. high degree.
Wow. Never see it.
Yeah.
Right. Just never rare. See it.
Yeah.
So
pretty
good.
Special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
really
like
is.
What a great thing and how accessible it is mm-hmm. too, yes. to be mm-hmm. able to just like, all of the materials that you guys have been able to put out over the years have mm-hmm. been so accessible to people who don't understand necessarily all the science and rigor
right.
that goes into this study mm-hmm. Can do this in their schools.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And a lot of people do just by using the materials that are freely available yeah. on PBIS.org.
That's right.
So most of it is on there that you can teach your team how to do it mm-hmm. yourselves.
The mm-hmm. videos,
yeah,
too.
The videos.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's videos.
I star in.
There's videos. There's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. Well, a major component of TIPS is really, like you said, establishing those meeting foundations, right? The roles on the team, the norms of how the team operates, the schedule, all of those things. So can you tell us and our listeners, like, what really makes those foundational elements so critical?
I think what makes them so critical is that, you know, we've all gone into a meeting and had that not so great feeling afterwards where like, what just happened? Was that a good use of my time?
I was there for an hour,
right.
but
did we accomplish uh-huh. any?
Yeah. We talked about a lot.
Yeah. I had fun with my yeah. colleagues or like, oh, we really complained a lot about that situation, but we didn't actually come to a decision. Mm-hmm. So I think the power of the meeting foundations is that it gets us organized quickly so we can jump mm-hmm. into the work that we need to do. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's really nice. And I will say that, you know, if you were to download the TIPS Fidelity Checklist from PBIS.org right now, mm-hmm. you could go, and you've never been trained on TIPS, you probably will be doing some of those things that are on mm-hmm. the Meeting Foundations mm-hmm. checklist. So they're just, they make sense. They're yeah. practices that make sense. Start your meetings on time. Have an agenda. Come prepared. You right, know, have right. meeting minutes. Have rules established.
Yes.
So a lot of that stuff just makes sense, but it clears the way mm-hmm. to just be able to get to the work and do the, you know, the evidence-based decision-making process and develop the solutions to, you know, impact the student outcomes. So
it's so simple.
Yeah.
But it's true. There are so many meetings that I've been a part mm-hmm. of here in the office, even where we study how to have
Never.
Meetings.
I don't believe it.
No, you've ever. None that you've ever been a part of.
No. Not Aaron's meetings.
No, not Aaron's meetings. Aaron's meetings are organized.
Yes, they are.
But just the mm-hmm. even just the lack of an agenda,
right?
You know, that we're getting together to talk about a topic, mm-hmm. but there's been no real thought about how we're going to navigate right. through that mm-hmm. to get all of the information so that mm-hmm. we can end with a decision and how we're going to. Who's going to do it and when.
Exactly.
So mm-hmm. It's those kinds of foundational yeah. elements that yeah. I think we take for granted as something
right.
that we all take minutes.
Mm-hmm.
There's somebody who puts something up on the screen.
It's projected, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of those types of activities feel so regular,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know that we always do a good job of it.
No. But tips helps hold folks accountable for those things too, right? I think that's that accountability piece is really huge, because without that, it can be just talking in circles about the problem rather than moving forward to solutions.
Mm-hmm. Can you say again, what are those foundational elements?
So there's six different meeting foundations. Okay. And so there's like, do you have clear roles and responsibilities?
Okay.
Do you have a set agenda? Does that, you know, part underneath that agenda umbrella is, does the agenda and the meeting minutes from the last meeting, are those available at the current meeting? So you can refer to what the discussion
what you
was.
Did last time. Right?
Yeah. That's helpful.
Yeah. We have so much in our brains. We can't keep everything at the forefront of our minds. So we have our meeting minutes. We also have someone with administrative authority on the team.
Oh my gosh.
So that's a requirement as well. And that because of the roles and responsibilities is also part of the meeting foundations. You want the administrator to just be an administrator and not to also be the data analyst and also be the facilitator. We actually want that distributed leadership so that you're building capacity and it's not just the leader telling the team what needs to happen, but that everyone is involved in the process.
So smart. Danielle and I, as we were talking about, as we've been talking about data as an element of PBIS as like one of the three circles, right, of our framework. I think that sometimes schools have a feeling when we talk about using data for decision-making in a meeting or introducing data to inform our decisions, it's not always a good one either. Like it's not always met with like, let's do that. Let's use data. Let's collect data. Let's like analyze the heck out of it. So have you experienced that with some schools where they have kind of like, I don't know about that. And what do you think that barrier is? What's preventing from doing that? Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of, I would say, barriers to doing the work of looking and digging into the data. One is knowledge and feeling comfortable with data. Mm-hmm. I think some people have anxiety around even knowing how to read a graph.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Knowing how to, look at
it. I think we take it for granted because we see it all the time around.
Yeah, right. We live and breathe it.
It's so scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I could see that.
We live in data world.
We do live in data world. It's a bubble.
Yeah, we're in a bubble. We are totally in a bubble. Yes.
So I think some people, definitely data is overwhelming. Sometimes it's inaccessible. You know, we're really lucky because we are mostly working with schools that are using SWIS, and it's very conducive to this process using your drill down reports. It's super user friendly.
Right.
So, but when I work with schools and districts who aren't using things like that, they've got to work with a data system that isn't meant for this level of decision making. So it's a barrier.
It's cumbersome.
It's cumbersome to even access the data. Mm. So that's a big part of it. And then I think, you know, traditional ways of doing things are that the principal or the, you know, assistant principal has been in charge of it. And so it's more of one person leading the effort rather than that the collective team working together collaboratively. I think that's been a barrier as well.
Just being able to have access to it and to make decisions together.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other part that we've heard too, we just held a community of practice. Danielle led us through a community of practice event where we were talking about this question, I think.
Yeah.
And some of the things that we heard from that session were related to data being used as a punishment almost. As like this accountability.
Yep.
That if you have so many referrals that you've written that someone's going to come for you and tell you that you're doing a bad job or that some sort of consequence will happen to you as an adult because people looked at data for in their decision.
Absolutely. I mean, sadly, there's very famous states and counties and districts who have been caught cooking the books, if you because they don't want, you know, they know what the data is internally, but to have to report it to an outside agency, it has unfortunately been punitive. Yeah. So the work of sharing the data outside of the school or even in the school team, that there's a trust building exercise that needs to be done there. And that's also, it kind of goes outside the work of our TIPS research a little bit, but certainly district staff need to create the space where it's safe to be able to share the true data of what's happening so that you can truly support the adults in the building to set, you know, make the changes that they need to so that that can then reflect into the student behavior.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, this, it's really, one of the things we've been thinking about asking our guests for this year and talking about, or what are the questions that always come up when we look at data? But I know one of them that's come up for me in work that I've done with teams is often, can we trust this data? Does this seem reliable? Is this actually reflecting what's going on? Or is this just reflecting, you know, the some of the teachers who are capturing that or writing referrals or whatever? Like, it's not always accurate.
So right. I think that's a factor. There's also work that needs to be done from that collective PBIS tier one leadership team to communicate to all staff in the building how they're using the data, what they're using the data for, and to share the success stories after they did use the data, because then staff are then more motivated to actually collect accurately those minors, those majors, so that the team is better, the whole school is better off because those data are being used in that decision-making process.
Yeah,
makes Rob, total sense.
Rob, in our August episode, shared that it's his perspective that when you ask someone to collect some data for you, it's your responsibility as the person looking at those data to share them out within 3 months of collecting it. And when he shared that decision rule, it made a lot of sense to me because we've talked about too before in previous episodes where as parents we're asked to take a survey about some policy in our student school or in the district or something, and that's it. We just take the survey, and I never hear about what were the results of that survey, let alone how does that affect the decision that someone was supposed to make. And so if you're asking someone to submit these referrals or to take the climate survey or something else where you're asking people actively to submit this data to your team so you can make decisions, it only makes sense to me that you share out, here's what you all said as a group, as a collective, and here is how that informs our decisions.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, so Erin, I mean, this brings up a good point. Like, you've had the opportunity through this work to work with schools all over the country, meet with administrators, probably observe.
How many meetings have you seen?
Ooh,
I can't quantify it, but for our last study, we coded over about 100 meetings.
Unbelievable. So through those observations, right? We're curious, what are some of the red flags that stand out to you for ineffective meetings? And then on the flip side, what are the green flags for when a team meeting is effective?
I think, you know, for me,
you noticed.
Yes. I think for me, I always start with the fidelity checklist. So I'm going to start with the data.
Ways of researching.
I can't help it.
We get it.
Of course, there's the feeling of how a team works together and you want to hear all the voices represented. And but if a team is following that fidelity checklist where they have the roles and responsibilities, they know what their purpose is in the meeting.
Oh my God, that's huge.
A huge thing that I think people do not take the time to people just assume that, oh, we're on the tier one meeting team. And so we all know what that team is supposed to do.
Sure.
And so, but it is a worthwhile activity, especially at the beginning of the school year, to go ahead and clearly define what the tier one team purpose is and what the purpose of the tier two team or intervention assistance team, student study team. Everyone needs to be really clear on what their purpose is and then how those teams communicate between each other. So I think when I walk into a meeting, if there's only one person talking the whole time, then we clearly haven't done a good job of making sure that everyone feels a collaborative, you know, part of this work together. So that's a big thing. So by having those roles and responsibilities as part of the fidelity checklist. So I see that as creating the positive environment that you want people to have so that when they're leaving the meeting, they feel accomplished because they came to the meeting, they did what they said they were going to do. They're following up on what they said they were going to do last week, and they're seeing how that is making a difference with the students.
Amazing.
Great.
And then if they don't have that.
If they don't have that, and for me, obviously, if they don't have data.
Yeah.
If they don't have data, that's a huge issue.
Yeah.
That's like the bottom, like, what are we doing here if we have absolutely no data? And we're just talking about, like, have you noticed that it seems like kids are pushing each other in line, but we don't have actually any, well, it's actually happening with the fourth and fifth graders as they're transitioning through the hallways in between lunch and recess.
Right.
And it's 10 students and maybe, you know, so if you have a whole, and they're doing it for peer attention. So we're function-based thinking.
Yes.
So without the data, it's really hard to come up with a plan.
Yeah.
And then for that plan, you're lowering your chances of that plan being effective if you're not starting with the data.
Yeah. I have a, I'm thinking, as you're talking about this, we were just mentioning how not everyone is super comfortable looking at data.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the roles that you've talked about is a data analyst role. And so what is that person ultimately responsible for when they come to the meeting? Are they doing that work of like getting to that precise statement, or are they getting broad strokes, or like how much does it take to be the person that's like, I'm bringing the data today.
Right. I've got my login. I can log into the system.
I know how to log in and see it, but I don't know what I'm doing after that.
Yeah.
How far into the weeds does that person get, and how much time does that take ahead of the meeting to get prepared?
As part of the TIPS process, you do want the data analyst to prepare for before the meeting, for them to have a chance to look at the data so that they are coming to the team with some ideas of some areas that need to be, you know, an area of focus.
Yeah.
And so part of the TIPS process is defining a precise statement. And that's where we talk about the who, what, when, where, why, and how often of the behaviors of concern. And that data analyst is supposed to look at that data before they come to the meeting to have a sense of it. Certainly when you get to the meeting, team members can say, hey, I noticed.
I'm actually more curious about this.
Yeah, exactly. That a team member could bring, and that can get added to the agenda, certainly. But then before the meeting, the data analyst, and maybe the data analyst has spoken with the team facilitator.
Yeah.
And they're going to talk about it a little bit, and they're going to plug in. We have a team TIPS meeting minutes template.
Yeah.
And so that's also available on pbis.org, and we've just updated that. So if you download that, we've got a little
new version.
A more modern version from the 2016. It still says 2016 on it, but know that it's actually 2025. And when you download the actual copy.
Okay.
And so we are looking at the data, and that data analyst is bringing the data ahead of time. And then they are logged into the system, and they are able to quickly look up additional sources of data if needed. But it does make the team meeting time go more quickly because some of the work is done ahead of time. And so, and personally, like I sat on a team at an elementary school, a tier two team, where we were using TIPS, and it was a before school meeting, which is always a little rough for me because I'm not a morning person. And that meeting was 45 minutes usually, and every other week. And then because of, by the time we really got our TIPS process dialed in, by December, that meeting was down to 35 minutes.
Amazing. Wow.
And then sometimes it was 30 minutes, depending on the time of the year and what we knew, because everyone came to the meeting prepared with their data, prepared to report out about the tasks that they had assigned, and prepared to know what are the resources available to us to make changes if we aren't seeing the desired change as a result of our intervention.
I think it's such a common thing to just show up to a meeting.
Yes.
Be like, I'm ready to talk.
Oh, yeah.
Right. About a thing. But that preparation that you're talking about, I've been a part of and have been the person to do some of that legwork ahead of a meeting. And when it happens, everyone is grateful.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Because then it's like, we don't have to like, now I got to log in and now I got to do the thing.
Oh, I forgot my password though.
And you know, like when you show up and the room is ready and someone has done the work of looking at the data ahead of time, and they will show you what it looks like and how they got there. And all of that, it streamlines.
Yes.
And it feels like a productive use of time instead of just like fumbling around.
Yeah. And it's not, I mean, I'm a former school psychologist, and I too, don't tell anyone, but I too have been guilty of only showing up with some of the data that we
need. Yeah.
And now we have to reschedule another meeting because we have to look at all of the data, and just slows. And you know, time is of the essence when we're talking about behavior and creating a positive environment for school, for students. So if we can make all these decisions today and not delay them, it makes a huge difference.
I would say that's a good takeaway. I mean, I'm just thinking back to when I was coaching schools, like a lot of the work I did was not at those meetings, but it was to prep for the meetings. It was to make sure that people had roles and responsibilities, whether they were using TIPS or not. But it's just getting ready for it. The same as a classroom teacher, right? Mm-hmm. Like I can't just show up and be like, okay, we're going to do math. Like I have created lesson plans. I have thought about that. And so it's kind of the same mindset from a teacher to do these meetings.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the prep sets you up for success.
Absolutely. And then the team is able to do the work of creating the solutions together.
Yes, exactly.
And that's the collaborative approach. Whereas the digging in the data might not be everyone's cup of tea. Yeah. So it's good to take that off of some people's plate and just use your time as efficiently as possible when you've got the whole team gathered.
Super as someone who does like to look at data and has helped people to like interpret it, are there questions that you like to ask whenever data come across your, well, I guess your screen at this point? It used to be like slide it across the table or whatever.
It's all difficult
when you see
now.
A graph for someone's trying to present you information, are there questions that immediately come to mind most of the time?
I always start with what's the purpose that we're, first of all, what's the question we're trying to answer with these data?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, are the hallways safe? Well, if I only have the cafeteria data here, like that's not going to help me.
Yeah.
You know, so to give a very odd example, but, do I have the right data to make the decisions I need to make? So we have to start with the question we're asking even in the first place.
Yeah.
Or do we only have the kindergarten data available, but actually we were going to focus on the upper grades today.
Yeah. Oops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So just starting with what's the purpose? And then at some point, you know, in education, I think nowadays, frankly, people are drowning in data. There's so much data out there, academic, social, emotional, behavioral. And so we need to be really clear about which type of data we're using for which purpose and at which meetings. Mm-hmm. And frankly, are there sources of data that we don't need to collect because no one's actually using it?
Yeah.
Maybe we can revisit it another time, but let's focus on these three main sources of data. If it's attendance, you know, our literacy screeners, our ODRs, and maybe like a school climate measure. Yeah. Let's start there and just really get focused and be very efficient with the sources of data we're looking at, and then see what improvements we can make based on a critical collected group of data rather than everything at once and not being able to use all of those sources of data.
No, you just don't have the capacity to do all of it. It's better to do a few things and do those really well and then scale it up over time.
Exactly.
Right? I love that. Okay, well, let's switch gears because we've learned a lot about the meeting foundations and these pieces and using data, but how do we get from looking at the data to really developing solutions, right? Like how do we define the issue we're talking about with next steps? What are those steps or where do people start?
Yeah. So we have, you know, a 6-point process. That's right. What makes,
you got to push your glasses.
I know I do. Yeah. You all couldn't see it, but I was doing it. We have a 6-point process to go through our database decision-making process. And that's what makes TIPS effective, frankly. Meeting Foundations is great. It helps make everything run smoother. But where the magic happens is in that database decision-making process. So we start with defining the precise statement, as I said, the who, what, when, where, why, how often. We identify a goal for change. And this is something that a lot of teams skip over. Mm. Even in teams in our research who have been trained, only about 30% of them will really work on the goal for each and every one of their intervention plans or solution plans. So that's something to think about. And we do SMART goals, which I know many people have heard, but measurable, you know, realistic, timely. So all of that part of the goal is embedded in there. And then we focus on identifying the solution. So what's the intervention plan? Mm-hmm. And the solution is where I think, again, the TIPS process gets a lot more specific than most people are used to. So when a PBIS team is focused on building an action plan, a lot of times we lean back on things like booster sessions to reteach the school-wide expectations. And we'll do that for the whole school, maybe even though the issue's only at fourth and fifth grade or, kindergarten. So with the TIPS training, we ask people to think about the solutions, interventions more holistically and multifaceted. So we say, you know, what's a prevention strategy you can use? What's a teaching strategy, like a booster you could use? What's the recognition system that you're going to use for this? Mm. So you could have all three of those. And also, what's the feedback that we're going to give to students who aren't, you know, in board and online with this, with the new way we're doing things.
Yeah.
So you're looking at not just doing one of these strategies, but how can we do multiple aspects of these strategies? And maybe different people are going to be different, are responsible for different aspects. So like someone in the, who's got lunch duty on Wednesdays, they're the ones who are responsible for the recognition and positively acknowledging students who are, you know, not pushing other kids in line in the cafeteria line. Whereas the classroom teachers are the ones who are going to practice with their classrooms again before how we go into the cafeteria, you know, what those expected behaviors are. And then maybe there's at the school-wide level, there's going to be an announcement, you know, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday about like the classroom that did the best job of cleaning up in the cafeteria afterwards. Mm-hmm. So it's not just one single approach, yeah. but it's giving those interventions a really rounded, dynamic, multifaceted approach. Well, and I think the nice thing about this too is that it's not too burdensome for any one, mm-hmm. for just classroom teachers. Like they're the ones that have to fix it all. Or just the principal has to fix it.
Right.
So this way it's, again, everyone is included in that process. And you are tying it to what you think the function of the behavior is.
Yeah.
So we can't forget that. Yeah. So, you know, if it's like to gain peer attention in the cafeteria that this stuff is happening, then we're going to teach the kids what are more or different ways to positively get that peer attention when they're standing in line at the cafeteria.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I was thinking when you were explaining this too was that it's really getting everyone on the same page. And that's what, as like when I was a teacher and our school was implementing PBIS, I was drawn to it because I felt alone in my classroom, right? And this was like, oh, we're all going to be on the same page about what's expected at our school.
We're doing it and together.
And so it takes the weight off one person's shoulders. Or it's like, oh, the lunch duty person, well, they're in charge of lunch, so good luck. It's like, they're waving their hand, like, help, please. Like, let's all, we're having announcements. So the kids are getting, and the adults in the school, they're all hearing a consistent message about what the expected behaviors are, what we're all about at our school, and supporting each other in that.
Right.
Like, that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love
so
that.
I kind of think of TIPS as like an up-leveling of PBIS. So it just layers.
Okay.
It just kind of layers on to PBIS. So I think it's a great thing to focus on, too, if your school has been doing PBIS for a while, and maybe people are just feeling a little bit static, you know, maybe need a refresher that this is TIPS is a really nice practice to focus on just to feel like you're refining and dialing in your already great and established practices.
Well, that makes me think though for folks listening. So does a school need to be implementing PBIS to use TIPS or do they need to be doing it with some level of fidelity? Like who's this for?
That's a great question. Yeah. So you do not have to be implementing PBIS in order to use TIPS. And in fact, we have a lot of partners across the country who work for different agencies, early childhood settings, youth centers, all sorts, even adult rehabilitation centers that use TIPS as a part of their system-wide database decision-making process. So it's really diverse. With some states, Pennsylvania, shout out to our colleagues with Patton, they've done a great job of adapting TIPS to be used for academics as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's really diverse in that way. Most of the research has been done with tier one PBIS. So that's something everyone should know. We like to focus on the areas where we do have the data and we do have the research. And so it's mostly elementary schools, tier one. We did have a study that wrapped up in 2023 that was focused at tier two at elementary schools. And then our current study we have is elementary schools again, but certainly people are using it in secondary level applications too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been a part of meetings here in this office where we have used the meeting template, the process of TIPS, like setting every meeting that's a brand new meeting, we set those norms. Yeah, like, what is our purpose? Who's doing what? How are we going to handle facilitation? Someone with decision-making authority available in these meetings regularly? When are we holding them? Do we have a room to hold them in? Will they be hybrid? Well, all of those things. Like, we set it all up and it's all from this work.
Absolutely.
It works in other settings because it's just good practice, I think.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, Erin, where can we learn more about and what's up next?
Yeah. So we are currently recruiting for our study.
Okay.
Hey, y'all. So if any of you are interested, we do have a website. You'll put the link.
I'll put a link.
Yeah. Yeah. The blogs.uoregon.edu/tips at TIPS. And we're recruiting for 76 schools across the country over the next 4 years to receive the TIPS training.
Cool.
It's another randomized control trial, but we're really wanting to empower the county offices of education, the ISDs, the ESDs, the education service districts, the school districts. And so we're basically giving that training, all those training materials and co-training with the sites. And then so that they go on and train other schools and districts across their areas in their region. So you can go to that website to learn more.
Great.
And and also we'll be at the PBIS Leadership Forum in October.
That's right.
And we're doing a pre-conference too. That's free for folks to come to if you're already coming. coming to the conference to talk about a tips update. And then also we are going to be releasing a couple of really cool apps as far as PBIS apps and training. So look for fall 2026 for announcements about a TIPS meeting minutes application that's embedded within the Swiss suite.
Ed took.
Yes.
I've had a sneak preview of Danielle's been behind the scenes.
Danielle's been great giving us feedback on the meeting minutes application. And then we also are putting some of the TIPS training online. And so in fall 2026, we will be looking for some beta users for that training as well. Certainly at the secondary level where it's not going to overlap too much with our current research.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's really exciting.
Lots of opportunity.
Yes. To get involved and to do some outreach with some schools that maybe aren't as connected with some of our other partners. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're recruiting across the country. We are currently working in California. It looks like we'll have some schools in Massachusetts, and we've got some inquiries from other states as well. So don't let geography be a limitation.
Okay. Open to all.
Well, we're so glad that you could be here and join us again. Third time's a charm.
You're our only so far third time guest.
Oh my gosh. Thanks, y'all. I'm honor. So special.
Yeah, it's you great. Are special. This is really important work you're doing.
And you're following your data to know how many.
Yes, we are. We sure are.
Good job. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Erin.